This Fan Run podcast is brought to you by DraftKings.
Football fans, I'm sure we all love an action-packed, high-scoring NFL game, but the latest no-brainer from DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, you'll be a winner once single points are scored. New customers who bet just $1 on any team to score can win $100 in free bets. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code FANRUN in all caps. Bet $1 on any team to score and win $100 in free bets. If they score, you score with promo code FANRUN in all caps this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older and Tennessee only. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line. 1-800-889-9789.
Hour two of the Blitz starts right now. Here on Fan Run Radio Live in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. Man, you want to get yourself some White Claw for bowl season, for basketball season, really just for your everyday life. Cheer on the Big Orange with White Claw Hard Seltzer. They're crafted with quality ingredients. White Claw Hard Seltzer is made from a blend of seltzer water, a gluten-free alcohol base, and a hint of fruit flavor. Just 100 calories, 1 gram of sugar, and 5% alcohol. Available in 16 deliciously refreshing flavors. Please drink responsibly. But, yeah, here, 105.7 FM, 1340 AM, also live in the Fan Run Radio app, which is free to download, free to take with you on the go. Wherever you get your apps, it's there. Take it with you this holiday season. Maybe just like listening to it, you know, not on radio either. Either or, go ahead and download that app. But we got an action-packed second hour coming up here. I know we all kind of graded on Josh Heupel, generally pretty positive. But as for the game on Saturday, the actual game itself, a 45-21, really just kind of mundane victory over Vanderbilt, in which, you know, statistically there wasn't anything crazy that happened. Just kind of felt like
Vanderbilt made it such a boring game.
They really did.
And their Twitter account was, man, did you see?
Yeah, so Reddit College Football, they are, I'm sure, you know, everyone out there, for the most part, a lot of you are familiar with Reddit. At one point, we had Reddit Survivor hack our TV show bracket and pour in, like, 29,000 votes for Survivor to win the best TV show. But, like... Reddit, there is a subreddit for college football. It is r-collegefootball or r-cfb, and they are generally, they have a Twitter account as well, generally very witty, informative. It's a place for a lot of discussion, but also a lot of humor. It's kind of like humor and college football combined, and they have 240,000 followers on Twitter, and it's generally, I actually got kicked off of that Reddit, but...
Like, you're banned from it? You can't go back?
Yeah, then
they
won't accept any of my appeals. I meant to copy and paste another article, and I accidentally copied and pasted an article that I wrote and posted it on there, and I deleted it in like 5 minutes, and they're like, you can't promote yourself, you're banned. And I tried to explain it, and they're like a typical Tennessee fan, and they banned me.
Oh, jeez.
But yeah, so that Reddit CFB took over Vanderbilt's Twitter for – the duration of the game.
What an odd Twitter to like after. Take over too. Like,
yeah, I mean, I'm sure they're probably one of the only ones that would agree to letting him do it, I guess. Well, the big thing is, it's no secret that Reddit College Football despises Tennessee.
Oh yeah.
I don't know if it's their moderators or whoever runs it or whatever else, but by far their least favorite school was Tennessee. I mean, they hate their guts. They hate our guts. Truly they do. You know, they consistently ban Tennessee fans from that subreddit. Tennessee fans have just kind of almost stopped using it to an extent because they're so biased against Tennessee fans. They hate them. But they took over Vanderbilt's Twitter, and it was so embarrassing. So, like, if I was a Vanderbilt fan, I would have been livid to watch my team not only get beat by our rival, but then to just see our Twitter account be so embarrassing. Even after the game, they tweeted out, with that win, Tennessee moves to 5-5 against Vanderbilt over the past decade. Like, just taking shots at Tennessee all day long from this Twitter account. And then of course, Tennessee, their social media accounts answer back.
Yeah. In some pretty witty.
Pretty hilarious ways. Our social media department does a very good job, but yeah, that whole thing was just annoying. And the way Vanderbilt played was annoying. That game was annoying. I didn't really enjoy it.
It wasn't a fun game to watch. It just, the way Vanderbilt played made it.
I mean, it reminded me.
It reminded me of a Jeremy Pruitt offense watching that game. Not our offense, Vanderbilt's offense.
Like Clark Lee was just like, how do we make this look as close as possible?
Yeah.
Let's do that.
It's like they tried to do what South Alabama was trying to do.
Right.
Or they copied the same style of play from South Alabama.
It was such a frustrating game. You know, they had some long drives, some long possessions. Tennessee's offense kind of didn't really look like it had the same swagger that it usually has. I don't really know why or what it was, but it looked a little conservative. They didn't really hit on some of those pass plays like I thought they would. Even with that, though, Hooker is still 10 of 18, still had two touchdowns. You know, Tillman, he still went for over 100 yards again. He had two touchdowns. And both of your running backs go over 100 yards as well and have some touchdowns. But it was the first time this season that you didn't score an offensive touchdown in the first quarter.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the most impressive accomplishment that Vanderbilt football's had in the last 5 to 10 years.
It's also the first time this season that I think Heupel did not cover the first quarter spread.
Very disappointing as well.
Oh, man.
Maybe the second. I think it happened one other time.
Maybe. But I know we also didn't cover the first half spread because of the dang
Hail Mary.
It was
a bad day to bet on Tennessee. Jeremy Banks, I thought, had a pretty good day. The announcers kept talking like he was some incredible football player. And I was just like, well,
if he got to play Vanderbilt every week,
I was like,
he's not
quite an incredible football player. He would be a decent second middle linebacker to pair with, you know, a really solid first middle linebacker. But unfortunately, Jeremy Banks has to be that guy. He did have a good game, though. He had 12 tackles. He had a hurry. You know, Aaron Beasley got in there with a tackle, 1.5 tackles for loss. He had 10 tackles. Theo Jackson, too. Really, really cool for him in his final game in Neyland. And on senior day, to be able to start the game off with that pick six, really right in front of the Tennessee section. You know, he said he was even looking up at his mom as he was running into the end zone. But certainly good to see him get that. I mean, he's just been so close all year long, it feels like, to picking some of these balls off. So he finally gets it done, and really probably an important touchdown, just given how, you know, weird and slow that game was, just to, you know, get yourself a little jump start early. But, you know, being from Nashville, too, he grew up just outside of Vanderbilt's campus. He had to deal with it the same way I did growing up when James Franklin was there, where all the Vandy fans got all cocky and, you know, he had to hear about Vanderbilt football all the time. And you know, I'm sure it's a nice feeling for him to get that win against Vanderbilt and get that pick six. But other than that, man, not a whole lot to take away from this game. I don't know. Do you guys have any further thoughts?
The only thing really is I feel a lot better with the running back room. You know, it's like we talked about, they both had 100 yards. It looks like Jalen Wright has really gotten better with more of a snap count as the season's progressed. Especially, you know, with Tyon Evans disappearing, it makes me definitely have a better sense of security at that position. You know, it's just one of those that I just saw the little guys do little things that make me feel better about the position we'll be in going into next year. Instead of, again, having to use the transfer portal like crazy like we did before this season. So it was just the little things like that. Do I want a better game and a better result? Heck yeah, you're so much better than Vanderbilt right there. But there was still some good little moments. And also, it's teaching me that without Hendon Hooker, we don't have a quarterback. Joe Milton, you can't do what you did in this game, my man.
Great point. That's another takeaway. Gaston Moore.
Yeah.
He should be QB2. I say that in complete seriousness. I mean, out of a backup quarterback, you want a guy that can come in and run the offense in its simplest form and play mistake-free football, and that's not Joe Milton. Joe Milton is not a backup quarterback, and I don't think he should be our QB2 going into the bowl game.
No, I mean,
If Hendon Hooker gets hurt first snap of the game, I legitimately think Gaston Moore gives you a better chance to win than Joe Milton.
Well, touching back just to your point real quick about the running backs, Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, everybody thought we were going to be really hurting at that position this year without Eric Gray. Just real quick to throw the stats out there, Eric Gray had 330 rushing yards this season and 2 touchdowns. Jalen Wright, who was our third string running back for most of the year, had 355 yards rushing and 4 touchdowns. So our third string running back was outperforming Eric Gray this year. And so
you love to hear it. You love to hear that.
And I just kind of think that goes to show to a certain extent that with decent enough blocking and the right scheme, you know, there are plenty of guys that you can put at that position that will be successful. And, you know, every once in a while you get guys that are more than just successful. You get guys that are game breakers, that are superstars, you know, like your Derrick Henrys, like your Jalen Hurts for, you know, a point in time, like
Najee Harris.
Alvin Kamara could have been, like Najee Harris. Mm-hmm. And that's different. But I think generally you can have a good run game with good play calling scheme and blocking, regardless of who's back there to an extent. So that's why the loss of Tyon Evans, I know we didn't really get into that yet either, but I don't feel like it stings that much because Jabari Small, Jalen Wright are both capable, and I think you're going to probably add to that room too this offseason, both in your recruiting class and then through the transfer portal. So
yeah, did you guys hear about Tyon Evans, how evidently he was just a big negative energy around, even off the field?
I mean, I didn't hear anything.
He wasn't going to classes.
I didn't hear anything like that.
Yeah.
You know,
it was just one of those that.
That's allegedly, you know, that's.
Yeah, just.
But
one of those sticky ones. It's just, you know, this was just kind of popping up on Twitter left and right, but it was just one of those that the teammates weren't too jazzed about.
I mean, allegedly, you know, it had something to do with academics, I believe, and mm-hmm. he maybe didn't want to go, but that's just all a legend. As for Tennessee's next game, though, next opponent, some bowl projections. I think really the ones that we keep coming back to are the Music City Bowl and the Duke's Mayo Bowl. Maybe you can still find your way to Florida. I don't know there, but Saturday down south, their latest bowl projection has Tennessee playing Purdue and the Music City Bowl. I would not like that. I don't want to play Purdue. I want to play, you know, a better team, but also, I just don't want to play in the Music City Bowl. And I certainly just, again, don't want to see Purdue ever in postseason play again, ever.
Yeah. They're,
no I, sport do I want to see them.
I hate Purdue. Everything about
them.
Mm-hmm.
As for CBS, they project you also in the Music City Bowl, but your opponent being Minnesota. I think you beat Minnesota by 30. I think you would smoke Minnesota. Minnesota, to me, is an overrated football team that can capitalize against offensive teams that struggle, like Wisconsin, for example. But P.J. Fleck is an incredibly overrated coach. I know Russell Smith loves him, but that's cool. He's not very good. You know,
I just don't want the Music City Bowl.
I don't want to play in Nashville either. I want to go play in.
Like, the point of the bowl game is to, like, expand, like, I don't want to go play a bowl game 2 hours away from their
right
home campus.
And plus,
I wish that we were eligible for the Las Vegas Bowl.
Oh.
It's Big Ten, Pac-12. Why can't that just be like SEC, Pac-12? That would be so much fun.
See, the thing is, like I feel like we won't get the Music City Bowl. This is just me being optimistic over here, just because there are a couple SEC teams that are behind us, you know, that we are on a nice little level in the SEC.
13 SEC teams are eligible for bowls.
I know. What are we, like number 8, 7, 8 in that overall, like take top to bottom records into.
Yeah, somewhere right around there.
Something like that.
But you got, you know, Alabama and Georgia likely. Well, I don't know if Alabama will make the playoffs, but
they'll be in New Year's Six. Alabama, Georgia, and Ole Miss will all be in the playoffs and in New Year's Six bowls. From there, you have Texas. You have the Citrus Bowl, you have the Outback Bowl, and you have the Gator Bowl. Those are your three. You know, your three Florida bowls, and those generally kind of go.
And I could see one of those taking us over a Kentucky.
Right, and right now in those you have Texas A&M, you have Kentucky, and you have Arkansas projected into those. Now, I think Arkansas and A&M, they probably get to stay in Florida.
Yeah.
But I think that people are kind of, you know, sliding Kentucky into that slot. And I wouldn't be so quick to just assume that Kentucky would get in over over Tennessee. You've had representatives from some of those Florida Bowls at your games recently. You beat Kentucky head-to-head. There's more of a financial incentive for these bowls to choose Tennessee over Kentucky. And really just, you know, SEC record-wise, they're just separated by one game. And Kentucky doesn't have to play Alabama. So I still think you could end up in Florida. As for the Duke's Mayo Bowl, I mean, they have South Carolina in that. So really, I think to some, the Music City is considered better than the Duke's Mayo Bowl.
I think I would put it that way. The Music City is a better bowl than Duke's Mayo. I just don't want
it's
it because
it's just not bowl. For us. Yeah. It's like we just view it a lot worse than everybody else.
It's probably
does.
My least favorite bowl, yeah.
Well, like, you know, South Carolina, if they would go to the Music City Bowl, they would get so jazzed. They would get amped up about going to Nashville for a weekend.
No, I mean, I don't want the Birmingham Bowl or the Independence Bowl or the Liberty Bowl. Like, those are
what
three that
I... What about the Texas Bowl? Would you be cool with that one?
I would love the Texas
Bowl.
Yeah, that
would be nice.
I wish Texas would have gotten to six wins.
Usually plays in the Texas Bowl? Usually
it's like a middle-of-the-pack West team.
Athlon Sports also has us in the Music City Bowl against Purdue.
And then I have Yahoo Sports right here. They have us in the Duke's Mayo Bowl, so we might see actually do all the Mayo Charlie against Virginia. And they have Purdue and Auburn in the Music City Bowl.
See, the one I just looked at had Auburn in Virginia and Duke. And the Duke's Mayo Bowl. And
see, it's
Tennessee
like,
and Purdue.
Didn't Auburn
we're
and
in
Purdue
that
play like 3 years ago in the Music City Bowl?
I think so.
That sounds right.
I think that
I
was
like
that
I
exact matchup.
Rondale Moore and...
Maybe it was 2 years ago. I think it was a year before the pandemic started.
I don't know. Might have been Mississippi State. I feel like Mississippi State's in the Music City Bowl once every like
three I thought
years
Auburn
too.
Just waxed them.
That sounds right, actually. Yeah, that sounds right. I don't know, but... We'll get some more clarity on it as bowls kind of start to leak out this week, too. You know, you kind of get to start hearing those rumors. And then next Tuesday, you will get the announcement of all of them. I believe it's next Tuesday. You get the college football playoff show, and you get then your big bowl mania show. And we'll probably know just a little bit before next Tuesday where Tennessee's headed. But they are going bowling. And a good way to wrap up year one under Josh Heupel. On the other side, though, we'll take a look around the coaching carousel. The coaching carousel is in full carousel, basically, full tilt.
All surprised how quick some of these are moving?
I mean, there are some really huge names open, obviously, in the college football world. Some huge schools, some huge openings. You had Florida, you had LSU, you had USC, and... You know, all those are then going to lead to more openings, which leads to more openings, and we're due for a pretty crazy coaching carousel. You have Virginia Tech open. Other than that, I guess you had Florida. Okay, so we'll take it back. Yesterday, things get crazy. You have Florida hires Billy Napier. Not ideal. I feel like for us, given who some of the other names that they were looking at were,
I think it could have been worse. I guess
what would have been worse?
I think Luke Fickell would have been worse.
Luke Fickell would have been worse. I agree there.
Lane Kiffin bolting to Florida would have been
much worse. That would have been a nightmare.
Yeah,
but I feel like it could have been better too. I mean, Billy Napier has a pretty solid track record. You know, he was under Nick Saban at one point. He goes to Louisiana, and at Louisiana, he piles together winning season after winning season after winning season. He has a record of 38-12 as a head coach. He is actually from Cookeville, by the way, Tennessee boy. Hmm. But he... Started as a GA for Clemson. He coached at Clemson for a while. Became the wide receivers coach at Alabama. Then an OC at Arizona State. Got the job at Louisiana where he was for 3 years. And in that time, won the Sun Belt. Won the Sun Belt West 4 times. Sun Belt Coach of the Year. 2-1 in bowl games. He had Louisiana ranked. And, you know, they were able to have some pretty talented teams, too. obviously there's still questions about him, you know, especially his, you know, his in-game coaching at times, I feel like, raises some questions. And specifically this year, Louisiana had instances where they really didn't play all that inspiring. They just kind of out-talented teams. And there were games that they should have won by a lot more. You look at when Louisiana, for example, played even just this past weekend, a 4-8 ULM team. I know it's a rivalry game, and you know I know that ULM has played some teams close this year, but Louisiana goes up 14-3 in the first quarter, and then they hold on to win 21-16. You look at a couple weeks back when Louisiana's playing Arkansas State and Bush Jones. You know, they escaped that one by just one possession. So still, you know, still some questions about his ability to be that in-game coach, but I do think it is a pretty good hire.
Yeah.
That worries me. I was kind of they really got it done pretty quick too. Other than that, LSU, obviously they're still open. And the big news from last night is Lincoln Riley. He's heading to USC. Shocking news.
Plot twist.
What is it with you and USC that just inspires people to lie to everyone's face and then lead their school and
leave a comfy
in the worst
situation
way possible?
Yeah.
I mean, Lane Kiffin did that to us.
Is it the bright lights of Hollywood or something?
I don't get it. I mean, USC, I understand that they are a traditional powerhouse, much like Tennessee has been. And I guess most coaches couldn't pass up living in Los Angeles, but
yeah,
nobody shows up to their games anymore.
Nobody.
It just doesn't feel like USC is the same USC anymore. I don't get it. They don't seem like, why would somebody who has everything going for him at Oklahoma right now just bolt for USC? It just doesn't, unless he's just scared of the SEC. That's the only thing I can think of.
I kind
of
feel like he felt like maybe he hit a wall. Maybe he hit a ceiling at Oklahoma, and he didn't want to make that transition to the SEC. You know, I think he turned down LSU too, who was probably offered him, you know, just as much as USC did. And I think you can look and say he probably didn't want to go to the SEC. And I don't think, you know, I don't think you can just sit here and be like, oh, you're chicken, you're scared, you didn't want to go to the SEC. I don't really blame him.
I mean, I don't blame anybody for wanting to get out of Oklahoma to go to the beach in sunny Los Angeles.
Well, I don't blame anyone for wanting to not have the pressure of being an SEC coach. Just look at the SEC this year. You had two coaches get fired. One won a national championship 2 years ago, and the other was playing for the SEC championship a year ago.
Yeah.
And that's just the real life that is the SEC, and it's not saying that either of those guys didn't deserve to be fired, because you could tell there was obviously a very negative trend in what they were doing as a coach. But, you know, there's certainly a lot of pressure that you're not going to have at USC. You're going to have some pressure, but you're going to get a while. You're not going to be having to play great teams every week. I mean, you know, you get to play Cal. You get to play Arizona.
UCLA.
You get to play, I mean, UCLA is considered one of the good teams.
I guess USC.
So if UCLA is considered one of the good teams, this sets up where Lincoln Riley should be able to win at least 10 games a season every year. It should come down to, will they avoid upsets and can they beat Oregon, or can they beat
Notre Dame,
Utah, who rises up that win 1 year? Or will they beat Utah Notre Dame the last week of the season every year? It's a great hire for USC.
It is. But I guess we'll really see, was Lincoln Riley handed the keys to the castle, or is he capable of building a program up?
That's another good point. Yeah. I mean, things were not necessarily trending in the right direction for Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma after he's starting to get more of his own guys in there. And, you know, maybe some questions about his ability to evaluate quarterback talent too, after Spencer Rattler got benched and then Caleb Williams comes in and looks like a second Spencer Rattler that's probably just a little bit less of a jerk.
Caleb Williams is out of there now too, isn't he?
Maybe. I feel like
I have a feeling things are about to go really, really south for Oklahoma.
Has a very good, you know, has very good leadership. They've really only had to make two coaching hires in the last, 30 years with Stoops and with Lincoln Riley.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. Like, they're not used to.
I think that they're willing to spend the money, and I think that they're capable of making the hire that can hold those, you know, hold that thing together. But I also, they are very much in danger of a collapse here, having to transition into a you know, obviously a much tougher conference. You know, they've already lost some of their top recruits. They're probably going to have a lot of guys transfer out. And the way that Lincoln Riley left them, too, so slimy, so messy. I mean,
very Lane Kiffin-esque.
Players basically found out on social media, and then he called a meeting. He talked to him for maybe 5 minutes. He sat there at a press conference the night before and basically, you know, redirected everyone's focus to LSU and said, "I will not be the next coach of LSU. We're going to do great things here," and left in the next morning. You know, Saturday morning he was telling his team, you know, there was even a video, "Hey, we're gonna beat these guys twice in a row, and we're gonna get to the playoffs." And you know, Monday it's see ya. Monday, bye bye.
Do we think he had this USC offer when he said that about not joining LSU?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
he had to have, right?
This
wasn't just out of nowhere.
In 6 hours on a Sunday morning. Like,
yeah.
He's known about this for weeks. And I think there's probably been an agreement in place for several weeks. If I had to imagine, I would think that they've probably had that agreement and they were waiting until after the regular season to act upon it. And I think Lincoln Riley's just been lying to everyone's face and gaslighting him into thinking that he's going to be there forever. And it really caught people off guard at Oklahoma. I mean, they're really going to have to take a step back and kind of evaluate things before they move forward, you know, too quickly, because they weren't prepared.
Yeah.
And that moves on to, you know, the next point real quick here. Everyone that's worried about Josh Heupel. Josh Heupel's not going to Oklahoma, guys. He's going to be right here. He's not leaving. And, you know, I know – you can point to, well, you know, CBS listed him as one of their potential candidates, and Athlon listed him as one of their potential candidates. And what about Yahoo? They said that he might be interested in going there. No, they don't know anything more than you or me or anyone else does right now, because Oklahoma doesn't even know what they're doing right now.
Yeah.
I mean, they were completely just upended by Lincoln Riley making this decision. You think that they just 2 hours later know who they're targeting, what their hot board looks like? No, those are just writers who have to put a hot board up so they can get people to click on it, because if they don't, then there's no one to click on. I mean, they just have to have that.
They lose their
and
job.
Obviously Josh Heupel is a lazy, easy answer to point to and say, well, he was the quarterback there, and he called plays, and he had a good first year. I bet they might hire him. You know, no. His relationship is terrible with Oklahoma. He's refused to go back there at any point. You know, his relationship with Stoops is terrible. And Stoops obviously is still involved in that program to an extent, because he's going to be the interim coach for the bowl game. So,
Bob Stoops, the coach.
I seriously wonder if they're going to go after old Stoops' brother, Mark.
That would be exciting.
So I was wondering.
I just don't know who Oklahoma could get that would satisfy that fan base right now. I mean,
there's not a whole lot, because, again, you're still competing with competing with, I guess, LSU right now, and other openings. I mean, even Virginia Tech, really.
Do you consider LSU a better job than Oklahoma?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I would.
I do, too.
I think everyone kind of does, because they're already established within the SEC.
Well, I saw Venables from Clemson might be on the list for Oklahoma, which, hey, man, go get them.
I mean, I feel like people are really kind of overlooking how hard it's about to be for Oklahoma in this coaching search, because it's going to be a really, really challenging transition to go from the Big 12 to the SEC. And I feel like with some of the other open jobs, people might not be that inclined to go try to do that at Oklahoma, especially with now your roster going to need to be rebuilt a little bit. But we'll see. Just know that Josh Heupel, he's safe, guys. Quit worrying so much. It's fine. Stay with us right here on The Blitz. Clarity on the college football playoff picture. And what was really just an awesome, awesome rivalry week.
Yeah, if Alabama would have lost. They should have lost.
Yeah, they should have.
If it wasn't for Tank Bigsby going out of bounds, Alabama would not be in the playoffs. All he had to do was just go down.
Guys, Young played so
what a weird,
terrible,
yeah,
too.
What a weird Iron Bowl. I guess we can start there. Alabama, you know, the comeback to win in the two-point conversion off, which how many people in the state of Alabama do you think were wildly confused by that two-point conversion off? Because that's all I could think about. I was just I was sitting there laughing my butt off, thinking about all the Alabama fans that are sitting there. What is going on? Why are they just going back and forth with these 2-point conversions? What could this be?
And
because you know they don't look online.
And again, when Brian Harsin, they went on defense first. Auburn did. Alabama right. scored, kicked the extra point. Auburn went down, scored. Go for two.
Yes.
Go for two, end it. You are not going to win a shootout with Alabama with your roster.
The other thing is, right, now that once you get to a third overtime and there's a 2-point conversion shootout, if you score at the end of the first overtime and have a chance to go for two and win the game as the underdog, you should always do it because odds are, you know, you have probably a 50% chance to get to that third overtime. And if you kick the field goal, you know, there's still a pretty decent chance that you stay tied through that second overtime.
Right.
So if you're going to get to a point where you're going to be having dueling 2-point conversions anyway, if you try your 2-point conversion in the first overtime, if you get it, you win. You win. You use your best 2-point conversion play in that first overtime, and you win. If you use your best 2-point conversion time or play in the third overtime and you get it, you don't win.
You still got
to
stop.
You still have to stop someone else. So in that regard, you know, as the underdog, you might as well just go ahead and use your best 2-point play after you score in that first overtime just because
you're going to get to that point anyway.
You know, you're probably going to get to that point anyway. You might as well do it where it wins you the game instead of gives you a chance to win the game.
Especially with the quarterback that you're running out there trying to keep up. Hobbled like crazy. He couldn't even move left or right.
And you know that you don't have the athleticism defensively to really be able to guard Alabama on the goal line.
In their defense, they did stuff Alabama on tons of short yardage opportunities Saturday. But I just, in that situation.
I'm talking about like the athleticism defensively, like the pass plays. You know, like that little zig route where you fake in and cut out. I mean, either way, whatever route, if he wanted to run a slant there, he would have still broke open. I mean, you just don't have that kind of athleticism on
Auburn's
the outside.
Defense was gassed at the end. I think you go for the win there. You leave it all out on the field. You put it in your hands, your offense's hands in that situation. But like I said, it wouldn't have even mattered if Tank Bigsby would have just gone down and not run out of bounds on that first down play.
Right. Just incredibly dumb to me.
And then on the third down play, you know if you get stuffed, they're getting the ball back.
Mm-hmm.
You got to run something better than just a handoff up the middle.
Yeah.
Like, that was an awful play call.
Yeah.
I mean, he was coaching scared. Well, that's what it was. He was coaching scared.
It gives Alabama now a chance to stay in the playoff conversation. And elsewhere in rivalry week, you had Ohio State get smacked around by Michigan.
Harbaugh's first win over the Buckeyes.
The Harbaugh brothers took care of the state of Ohio this weekend. Yeah. Al Michaels, man, just taking kill shots at the end of Sunday Night Football. And my roommate, too, is a diehard Browns fan and diehard Ohio State fan, and he heard that as he was just going back to bed, and he was just so sad.
Did you hear what Harbaugh had to say discreetly about Ryan Day?
Some people are born on third base and think they hit a triple.
Yep. I thought that was pretty clever.
That was really funny to me. I don't agree with him. I think Ryan Day is an excellent coach, regardless of what he inherited. But
it's a good rivalry. Good smack
genuinely
talk.
Genuinely just blown away by this result. I thought that there was no way that Ohio State didn't win this game by 20.
Yeah, I thought the 7.5-point line was way too low.
I bet on it, and then I doubled down, and then I tripled down, and then I quadrupled down, and then I five-tupled down. Live, just continuously. I mean, I can't believe what I saw. And coming into this game, you know, I feel like we did talk about Ohio State's defense. They were good in the secondary, and their defensive line's not bad. But their middle linebackers are so terrible that, you know, it kind of brings down the rest of that unit. They have not gotten good linebacker play. And I kind of underestimated – you know, how big of an effect that would be against a physical team like Michigan State who can get up in there and run the football. And I feel like Ohio State's offense probably could have scored at will if they wouldn't have just shot themselves in the foot. But their defense, I mean, it was terrible. Those linebackers were terrible. And they just got bullied. I can't believe I sat here last week and said that I told you I think Ohio State might win the national championship.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, that was a dumb thing to say. And
Like, at this point, is Stroud even still the Heisman?
I mean, he still played well. 34-49.
Yeah, he still had a good game.
I don't think there's anybody right now that separated themselves in the Heisman race. Like,
I think if anything, you're getting guys like defensive players that now legitimately have at least some sort of shot. Aiden Hutchinson, just won Defensive Player of the Year in the Big Ten. He had 14 pressures against Ohio State in one game. 14. That is a record since Pro Football Focus began tracking pressures. Since that stat has become a thing, that is the record for the most in a game. And you know, he's up there with, I think, like 15 and a half sacks. You know, he's a guy that could definitely be considered for the Heisman at this point. You know, maybe Kenneth Walker's back in the race. I don't know. At this point, I don't think anyone knows. Bryce Young will probably just end up getting it somehow.
Probably.
Which is terrible. Gross,
but Harbaugh gets to keep his job now, right?
Yeah, you got to extend him. Harbaugh gets there. To keep his. You know what's going to be really funny, though? When Michigan turns around and loses to Iowa next week.
That defense is still good for Iowa.
And then obviously, you know, the late game, Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. Bedlam is my favorite game of the year. Every year I look forward to it. You know, outside of...
Sucks that it's going away.
Outside of Tennessee, my two favorite games of the year are the Egg Bowl and Bedlam. And we oh, it is going away. Are you still going to play at non-con?
Probably not. Not with the nine-game SEC schedule.
If they don't play at non-conference, then I don't know. I'm just going to cry,
we'll
probably.
We'll get Oklahoma versus Vanderbilt instead.
God, don't even say that.
But Bedlam was crazy. A 37-33 victory for Oklahoma State after they scored 13 unanswered in the fourth quarter. Both teams basically tried to lose this game as much as they could, and then Oklahoma State kind of won it in the end with some good defense to hold up at the end, and Spencer Sanders kind of grinding out there. But we're basically now we're set up where the playoffs make sense. You know, you have Georgia who's going to be in either way, and then you have Michigan and Cincinnati where they need to win in their championship games to get in, and then from there. You have some combination of Oklahoma State or Notre Dame, depending on if they win their championship games, they get in. Well, I guess Notre Dame's obviously not playing a championship game, but if Oklahoma State wins their championship game, you feel like they probably get in at 4.
Yep.
And then if they don't, it becomes a decision between 10-2 Ohio State, 10-2 Alabama, 11-2 Alabama, or 11-1 Notre Dame. And I feel like that's pretty much where we're at with these playoffs. Maybe even look at 11-2 conference champion Baylor.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking.
So we're getting a lot of clarity, and you know we'll see those rankings again tomorrow night. But got to get it out of this segment. Gone a little long. We'll wrap up the show, as we always do, on the other side with a little If You Haven't Heard. Never knew that I could feel this much. Man, I hit my knee on the table somehow, and that hurt. But
it's a sturdy table. I've done it too.
I've hit my knee on that side over there where it's sharp, way too many times. They used to make fun of me, but... last segment of the Blitz right here on this Monday morning, Monday the 29th. Chance will be back with us tomorrow, I do believe. Yes.
Yeah.
Chance will be back with us tomorrow, but real quick, want to tell you about our friends over at FanDuel. We got a big Monday Night Football game tonight. And FanDuel. They're the place to go for the NFL. The NFL regular season, it's heading into the final month of the year, and they're giving us a big Week 13 matchup between the Cowboys and the Saints, Thursday Night Football. FanDuel Sportsbook's about to make it even bigger because FanDuel's giving new customers 30-1 odds on either team to win. That means you can win $150 on just a $5 bet. The Cowboys, they have 8 positive COVID tests, including their head coach right now. Ooh. So we don't know what the other COVID tests are or whatever else, but you know, it might be a good time to jump on some Saints bets. You know, don't know what the Cowboys are going to look like, and I know you know the Saints aren't necessarily the most explosive offensive team, but Alvin Kamara, he has a chance to come back this week, or at least Mark Ingram. But you can make yourself a little same game parlay, money line, touchdown, touchdown score, spread, over passing yards, under on rushing yards. Really, the world's your oyster with these same-game parlays. And FanDuel is sports betting made simple. They're always, always hooking you up with great offers. Offers like these are just one of the many reasons that we love betting the NFL on FanDuel. It's the number one rated sportsbook app in America. It's easy to use, it's safe, and it's secure. Plus, when you win, you'll get your money in as little as 2 hours. Already a user, FanDuel is hooking up all customers with $50 when you refer a friend, plus your friend will get $50 too. See for yourself why FanDuel is America's number one sportsbook. Just sign up today with promo code BLITZ before Thursday Night Football. You can win $150 on just a $5 bet. But remember, use promo code BLITZ so they know that we sent you. Exclusively on the FanDuel Sportsbook app, must be 21 or older and present in the state of Tennessee. New users only, $10 first deposit required. Must wager in designated offer market. Max bonus $150. Bonus for teen users fulfilled in site credit within 72 hours. Teen site credit expires 4-10 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem, call 10-RED-LINE 1-800-889-9789. Got about a minute left. Anyone, if you haven't heard, it's out there. I know we got a lot of MLB free agency.
I got
ones.
Two I can hit real quick. Former Tennessee five-star target Zach Evans is apparently entering the transfer portal. He's a running back who ended up at TCU, averages over 7 yards a carry, and has over 1,000 his first 2 years at TCU. Could be a name to keep an eye on.
Any interest?
I mean,
he can stay the hell away from Tennessee as far as I'm concerned.
Well, the other one that I also have, Max Scherzer is reportedly closing in on a deal with the New York Mets.
We're going to ignore that one today. Not hurt me.
I mean, he's probably one of the biggest names left on the table, but
yeah, and rattle off a couple of more that happened in the MLB. The Blue Jays give former San Francisco Giants starting pitcher Kevin Gausman 5 years, $110 million, and the Minnesota Twins give Byron Buxton 7 years, $100 million extension.
And Simeon to the Twins.
And Simeon to the Rangers.
I mean, yeah.
Rangers, like everybody has a lot of money.
Wait, is that Marcus Simeon who was on the Blue Jays?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah, he got
I would have probably
bag.
I would have
Everybody's
given him
bag.
That money instead of Kevin Gausman. I don't know if you can trust Gausman's ability.
I don't trust Gausman to be a long
term.
Me neither.
Great year, but anyway, your days of the day, just two today. It is again Cyber Monday and Electronic Greetings Day. That's all for the Blitz. For Ryan, for GP3, I'm Charlie Collier. Thanks for tuning in, and we got plenty more Fan Run Radio coming
top
up
four,
next.
Middle four, bottom four tomorrow too.
Yeah.
Miss that.
We got that coming tomorrow. Just waiting for a chance to get back. But Talk Sports coming up next. Stay with us here on Fan Run Radio.